Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Back from Fred again, first time touch, trying to find Lukaku, it's broken his way and Lukaku's bent it into the bottom corner for what may well prove to be the winning goal.
Zinchenko. 1-2 with David Silva, tries to give it back to the Spaniard. He takes it down on his chest. Stab forward here to Bernardo Silva. Laid off to Mahrez! Riyad Mahrez fires Manchester City in front.
And that's the final whistle. It's finished Everton 0, Liverpool 0. A better second half, no question about it. But the Everton supporters and the Everton players will take more from this because they've stopped Liverpool from going back to the top of the Premier League.
As Aubameyang steps up. It's saved, but the follow-up is knocked over the bar. Incredible, Aubameyang blocked on the line.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 30 of the 18-19 season. Like an embarrassed middle-aged man given the Heimlich in a restaurant, Liverpool are denying they've choked. The league title has gone down the wrong hole, they say. Another weekend, another pair of points drop for the once seven clear Reds. It's Manchester City who top the table with the same amount of games played.
You're right.
Were you choking there?
I was.
You're choking. I'm worried about you. Okay. Can I have a glass of water? Cries poor Mortimer. Anyway. Big games for both this weekend and an almighty Champions League tussle to talk about too. As the league's best winning home run takes on the league's form team overall, Arsenal welcome Manchester United to Emirates Stadium. That's just two of plenty of stories to get through. Hopefully Paul's going to survive the show. I'm Tom Rennie and this is the Premier League Preview Show. Let's say hello to our panel. Let's start with TalkSport's football editor, your pal and mine, denim-shirted, handsome man he is, David Walker. How are you, pal?
I'm very well after that intro.
Yeah, well, compliment you.
That's nicer than you normally are to me.
No, yeah. I know. Every now and then I like to knock you down, then bring you back up again. I'm like the British press to your royal family.
Okay.
Also with us on the programme today, the former Arsenal winger and top soccer journalist Adrian Clarke is here. How are you?
Soccer? I like it.
Well, we've got a lot of American fans. You know, I'm bringing soccer back, association football. If it's all right for Bobby Charlton, it's all right for me.
Fair enough. Can I just say that David Walker, handsome David Walker, reminds me a little bit of Patrick Bamford.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that, absolutely.
It's been said before, actually.
Yeah, I can absolutely see it. But with his hair currently, he looks a little bit like more of a right-wing Patrick Bamford. I like it a lot.
The resemblance finishes when I cross the white line on the football pitch, I have to say.
Also with us to round out the group this week, the housewives' favourite, set your vacuums to stun, it's the former Charlton and Crystal Palace winger Paul Mortimer. You okay, Paul?
I'm fine. I've got a little frog in my throat.
A little something there.
Yeah,
a little tickle.
Yeah,
were you surprised? My opener was so funny. Is that what it was?
No.
You're used to years of dry, terrible openers. When you laughed at it, you were stunned by it. Is that what it was? It's okay to admit.
No,
I was
I'm
funny
just saying
once.
That silence gives you my answer. Insert tumbleweed.
Your previous cough betrays you.
Okay.
One quick line for those listening on a radio station. You can download an extended podcast of this programme. It's available on Acast, iTunes, Spotify, all good podcast providers. Right, let's get into our first match of the weekend. Arsenal against Manchester United, 4:30 UK time on Sunday. Couple of stats for this one. Arsenal have won their last 8 Premier League home games. They last won 9 in a row within the same season in 14-15 for Manchester Manchester United. They are on the current longest unbeaten run in the Premier League. 12 games, 10 wins, 2 draws in that time. We are recording this programme before the games against Rennes and Paris Saint-Germain. Such are the constraints of recording this show. Right, let's start with last weekend, shall we, in the North London Derby. Adrian, let's come to you on this. Of course, you were covering the game for our international team. Arsenal again saved their best performance of the season for a game against Tottenham Hotspur with a win this weekend. They go into the top four.
They do, yeah. And I think if they perform as well as they did against Spurs at Wembley, they'll be fine, actually. Manchester United are quite depleted, aren't they? The big difference in the North London derby was the organisation, the resilience, the work rate. There was clearly a game plan from Emery and the players delivered it, apart from Mustafi, who often is the one that makes that mistake that kind of ruins it for everybody else. So personally, I would hope that he sits this one out. But the Koscielny-Sokratis axis, I think, is one that's starting to make Arsenal fans feel a little bit better. I still think moving forward they can improve it, but those two guys are in good form. And I think they have to be, won't they, against Lukaku, who is probably the Premier League's most informed hit man at the minute.
Can I ask you about Mustafi at right back? Some may not have seen the last couple of games and he's played there. Mm. What's the thinking behind it and do you expect to see it this weekend?
Well, I hope not to see it. I'm just not a fan of him in any of the positions in the rear guard, really. He makes too many mistakes. Bellerin is out. Lichtsteiner is half fit. To be honest, the last time I saw him play, he played pretty well. So I don't see if he's available, he should probably play, in my opinion. And Jenkinson came in, I think, for the Bournemouth game that I was at, and he was excellent. He was outstanding. But does Unai Emery trust him against one of the big boys? Maybe not. So it's Lichtsteiner, Jenkinson or Mustafi, which maybe Maitland-Niles. So it's not a great quartet to pick from at the moment. Personally, I'd go with Lichtsteiner.
Paul, can I ask you about what's changed with Arsenal in recent weeks? Because for looking from outside as we do, of course, Adrian's there a lot, former Arsenal man as well. Yeah. They look way off the pace, way out the race. And now this weekend, they can go back into the top four, into fourth. And they're winning games with real style as well. There's 5 here, there's 4 there. They're winning games away from home. Yeah, it was Huddersfield, but they are winning games away from home. What has changed?
I actually think possibly, like it was at the start of the season when they started on this run, expectation was low. And I think they've come to a point where expectation, after the 22-game unbeaten run, they hit a slump. Expectation went back down. Because you're almost saying that's sort of where they were, that was their level. And so expectation was low. All of a sudden, you know, they've stiffened up. They used to have a soft centre. I mean, I look at Mustafi and I think if you take his shirt off, there's a stamp on the back of him, guarantees goals. And then terms and conditions are, but not sure which net they're going to go in. Because he does. He does guarantee you goals. But what they've got, they turn up for some of the bigger games. In the corresponding fixture against Spurs, they were strong, they were committed, they were pragmatic, they stuck their foot in, they scored goals, and they should have won that one the other day. They really should have. The problem you have with Arsenal at the moment is you have no clue what performance is going to turn up next. Mm. And that's where they are.
And you also have no clue which formation Unai Emery will pick, which starting 11 he will go with. It. He just changed from one game to the next. It's kind of working. Arsenal are right up there in the form table. Over the last 10 games, they're right in the mix, but there is no continuity. All I say about the big games, you're absolutely right, but Manchester United did a job on Arsenal, if you remember, in the FA Cup.
Big time. Yeah.
That was a very impressive
Arsenal weren't good enough that day.
No,
I've got to say, they worked them out. I mean, as you alluded to, the different formations, sometimes for players, that can be somewhat confusing because what message does it send them about what he thinks about them and their ability to understand and implement the system that he's put in place?
Big difference for this game compared to the FA Cup game, however, is Manchester United have got a lot of injuries to key players who played well that night and scored that night, and they've got a big game as we record this tonight on Wednesday against PSG, and they go into PSG 2-0 down with half a team as it is. So I mean, God knows what sort of team they're going to be able to put out against Arsenal at the weekend, but that gives Arsenal hope compared to that last game.
For sure, yeah. I think the central midfield positions are the ones where Man United are a bit weak at the moment. If they have to go into it with McTominay, Pereira and Fred, for example, we think Matic will come back, we don't know. if it's that three, I think Arsenal can dominate the engine room in a way they wouldn't. Obviously, you've got Pogba, sorry, that would clearly play in one of those positions. But I still think that Arsenal could get the upper hand inside the middle third. So, yeah, I would say that Arsenal should be more optimistic given that United have got the injuries. But Lukaku, I go back to him. He's on fire at the moment. I mean, 4-2. But I did a piece on him for the Premier League this week, and looking at the stats, his chance conversion numbers are through the roof, really.
Are they?
I'm surprised by that from
that sort of little spell he had out of the team.
I think there are two reasons behind it. I think one, well, he said three of the goals that he scored in the week would have been from his right foot, which is just unheard of, really.
What is the conversion rate, can I ask? Do you remember what it is?
Yeah, it's 32%. Under Ollie, it's a little bit higher than that. Under Jose, it was 20-something percent. Right. He's the second most clinical striker for Man United, statistically.
That's such a funny
Rashford point,
because Paul always says this to me, that what you see with your eyes and what come out in the stats are not always the same thing. Mm. I watched a game last week against Southampton. He did score two. Mm. But he could have scored eight.
Yeah.
In the first half, there was a sitter from a couple of yards out with his head. He fell over in the penalty area. It's funny, isn't it, the way the stats kind of tell a different story sometimes.
I think, yeah, they do. But I think the thing about Lukaku, how I think Solskjaer's done a fantastic job is Rashford's been the guy. But Rashford will score, he'll come off, Lukaku comes on. So throughout it, Lukaku, it doesn't look like... I mean, I thought Lukaku would be in a bit of trouble. But as it's gone on... Solskjaer's given him 20 minutes, half an hour there. So he's literally sort of said to him mentally, you are still involved. Knowing full well at some point he was going to ask him to step up, and here it is.
Yeah, well, the competition for his place was never there under Jose. I think he got too casual. Now he suddenly got stiff competition. So I think that sharpened him up. And I also think that Solskjaer's influence on the training ground might have helped improve him. I mean, three goals with his right foot, three really good goals. I would imagine he's worked on it.
Some of the injuries you mentioned for Man U. So we've got Valencia's out, Darmian's out, Martial, Matic, Jones, Herrera, Mata, Lingard. Long old list of players. One man I've not mentioned there, Alexis Sanchez, who's going to miss the next 6 to 8 weeks with injury.
It's most of the season.
Most of the season, if not his last ever games for Manchester United. Adrian, are you happy we're not going to have the Alexis Sanchez sideshow for this game? And also, has he played his last game for Man U?
Oh, I don't know if he's played his last game or not. It's probably a bit premature. It depends. I mean, he's got the odd tune out of him. He was really good in that game, wasn't he, in the FA Cup? He scored a great goal.
And I wouldn't write him off. I think the Emirates crowd that night, they were booing him every time he got the ball. And I think, you know, that probably spurred him on to deliver a performance that he hasn't done, really, in the Manchester United.
Yeah, I mean... Who do they offload him to? Who's going to take his wages?
Question.
I think he's struggling. I don't think he'll play anymore. I think the problem that you have with Alexis Sanchez, and you saw it when he was with Chile and for a couple of years with Arsenal, he has to be the man. He has to be the top man. And at Manchester United, he isn't. Yep. The problem that they have at United is almost like a version of supermarket sweep, where they just bought... you got 2 minutes to buy as many as you can. They bought him and then went, right, where do we put him now? He has never fitted into the way Manchester United play. They play with pace. He slows the game down because he wants to do what he wants to do. So I really don't think he'll play for United again. I really don't. He doesn't fit.
What about the Arsenal strikers though this weekend? Lacazette started last week. Aubameyang came on just after half time. What do we think we'll see lining up this week?
I think only one of them from the start. It's just not really clicked with the two up top yet. I hope and pray that they can work something out so you can get these two guys on the pitch together combining. But for now, I think that's too much of a work in progress. Who'll get the nod? Maybe Aubameyang will get the nod here. I think Lacazette's having an outstanding season. And he's a better all-round player than Aubameyang. But that pace in behind Smalling and Lindelof, I think he will be seduced by that Emery in the build-up, and he'll go with him.
If Arsenal don't make the Champions League for next season, can they afford to keep both Lacazette and Aubameyang unhappy, one on the bench?
It's a good question. They don't look unhappy. They're earning a packet, aren't they? And they're good pals, and they're playing for the biggest and best club in London, so I don't see
why... They've signed for Spurs already. I had no idea.
Do you know what? I think, you know, they've done really well. Be interesting if someone has a nibble at them in the summer to see, because I do. I look at them both, and 20 years ago, when everyone played 4-4-2, they'd have been fine. At the moment, because people only play one up front, you'd play Lacazette because his all-round play is better, but Aubameyang scores the goals. Apart from that terrible penalty the other day, You can't.
Did Vertonghen take that?
Yeah, tell me about it. It was close enough. You can't play two up front in the current climate because no one does. They all play one up front and they crowd the midfield. Aubameyang, who has been playing sort of wide-ish, doesn't run back. So the way Arsenal play and pressing the ball and all that business, he can't play in that. I don't think he can. So
against the easier teams, he can.
Again, yeah. But I mean,
not Manchester United.
Exactly. The bigger games, he can't. So they're going to have a decision to make because both of them should be playing.
Yeah.
But because they're not, at some point, one of them is going to say, I'm not quite happy.
Age is a factor. They're not the youngest strikers. So possible suitors, they might not be queuing up as much as you would imagine, given the fact that they wouldn't have any sell on. But
is
no,
personal
be
experience, Aid, you're giving us here?
Sorry?
Is this personal experience?
I'm not sure about that.
Like a dating video.
I'm not sure about that, just simply because if they score loads of goals...
Yeah.
There are desperate teams out there who will pay someone because they just... I mean, it's finding someone who can score goals is a difficult thing at the moment. Clubs across Europe are looking for them. Short term, I could see it.
Lads, we've got to move on. Should mention that Lucas Torreira won't play in this game. Arsenal did appeal. He's sending off last week. That appeal was rejected, so he's going to miss the next three games. Who makes top four? The winner of this game, do we think? If Arsenal win it, they make four. If United win,
No. You can't keep saying this thing. There's loads of games left.
I can.
You don't get the top four place after you win one game with eight games left.
I can throw the question out to see what people
week.
Say.
They could lose next
week. They could
week. Do. They could lose on the last day of
they
the season.
They absolutely could do, but if you're in the position of fourth, you're obviously the favourite for
fourth. Big psychological
forward,
advantage,
aren't you?
But
it's
not
so it is a worthwhile question.
It's not over. It's not over
So it's not over. So is it worthwhile or not? You can decide.
I think it'll go to the last weekend or the weekend before. It'll be that time.
Thank you. Oh, thank you very much.
Do you know what? I actually think Man United are the team in the ascendancy at the moment.
You can't say that, mate, because there's too many games left. We've got to move on. Liverpool against Burnley is the next. Don't blame me, it's his rules.
No problem. Okay, fine. I've got nothing to say.
Liverpool-Burnley is up next. Stay with us. On to Liverpool against Burnley. Sunday at 12 o'clock UK time. This one gets underway. Liverpool unbeaten in their last 35 Premier League home games. There's only ever been three longer such runs in the history of the competition. That's how good they have been at Anfield in the last year and a half. They have failed to win five of their last nine Premier League games home and away, four draws and one defeat in that time. They take on a Burnley side who have lost one of their last five away from home. That was against Newcastle United last time out. Paul Mortimer, let's come to you first on this. I keep reading and hearing that Liverpool haven't blown it at the top of the table. They're second at the moment to Manchester City. I keep reading that it's because nobody could compete against the might of Manchester City. But I told you there about the recent run. The draw against West Ham, the draw against Man U, the draw against Everton, the draw against Leicester. They have choked, haven't they? They have blown it.
Well, first of all, their plight's got nothing to do with Man City. Absolutely nothing to do with it. December, they're 10 points ahead. Up to 6 weeks ago, they're 7 points ahead. OK, I'm trying to think if they played Man City in that time. May have, they may not
have. Yeah, they had the Man City game that would have put them 10.
Exactly.
And it was January 7th, yeah.
So, since then, nothing to do with Man City. This is about them not taking their chances, because in every game, they've still created chances. But the problem that you're having now is, whereas Salah's getting it out of his feet and putting it in the top corner, it's hitting the keeper, or he's hitting the post, and it hits the post and bounces in last year. It's hitting the post and bouncing the other way this year. They're not taking their chances. It's as simple as that. They've only conceded 15 goals. So defensively, they're magnificent. What happens now, what's going to be crucial now, is the behaviour of the manager. If he starts to act a certain way, that's almost admitting they've blown it. I saw the papers early on today. They had Klopp's face superimposed on Keegan when he was doing that I love it moment, because that is apt.
Yeah.
It's now, if he behaves properly and is cool and calm, that's what transmits to the players. If he loses it, that's what's transmitted to the players. So it's important that he now holds his nerve.
If it is a windy day... then maybe Burnley are the worst team you want to play if it's windy on Merseyside once again. What did you make to that? It's windy at Goodison,
not
that's why we struggled.
Not the first time he said that. He said that on more than one occasion. He's complained about...
Wasn't one the pitch? Was about, too dry?
No, specifically wind. He has complained about wind before. Yeah,
well, wind, I don't know if it was the same for Paul, but that wind was my least favourite condition to play in.
Yeah,
it does make it a bit of a leveller. But no, it does. I'm sorry.
I can't believe they're saying it.
It really does.
Well, it was very breezy. easy today, so we lost 2-0.
Yeah, you can't use it as a sole excuse.
It was really
of course
windy.
You can't.
I was coming out of Stratford Station the other day, and literally got blown across the road.
See, it's the difference between
Storm
those that
Freya.
Have played and those that haven't. Because actually, the wind does make a difference. It really does. But Salah's clean through. The wind didn't stop him from missing the chances.
Great point.
So it's about, in these kind of games, when they haven't played well, they've not been as expansive as last season, you have to take your chances. They haven't taken their chances, and that's what's cost them.
No, I agree with Paul on both scores there, with the chance conversion and with Klopp, actually. I do think he looks a bit on edge. I do think he's slightly flustered. And Pep, on the other hand, is kind of quiet and cool, and he seems like he's really got the bit between his teeth. So yeah, in terms of the manager performance levels, Pep is in good shape at the moment. And I don't think Klopp is. I thought that was a bit of a strange one, bringing in Origi. I thought that was clutching.
It worked against Watford, didn't it? He played well in that game.
He did. I just think he's underused Shaqiri a little bit of late, maybe overplayed Firmino when he wasn't fully fit. I just think some of his midfield configurations have been a bit stodgy. He probably needs a bit more creativity there. So look, he's tried to be a bit clever lately, and it's kind of backfired Klopp. And yeah, I agree with Paul. I think he's a little bit rocked.
The midfield thing is interesting, isn't it? Because we had the long tease into Naby Keita coming to the Premier League, and not really done a great deal, has he? Can we call him a bit of a flop in midfield now? Naby
Definitely. Given how good he was in the Bundesliga, I think he's done very little. He's hardly scored a goal. He's not creating chances. You look at that midfield three, who's going to break the lines and do something, either get into the box and score or slip those magic passes that Coutinho used to do all the time.
Especially if you compare the magic word to Manchester City.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a De Bruyne. They don't have Bernardo or David Silva.
Yeah.
You know,
it is a bit one-dimensional, isn't it, really?
They have no options.
Very reliant on the wingers, on the fullbacks, rather, with Arnold and Robertson, who are fantastic. Probably the best in the division at what they do. Yeah, those midfield three are workmanlike, but not a lot more.
Soldiers. Yeah. That's what they are. They're soldiers. And they are reliant on the front three. And the problem you have is, because they've played the front three so often, those in reserve, Sturridge doesn't get a kick, Origi doesn't get a kick, so when they're set up to fail, those they can't be match sharp, they cannot be up to the pace. So then what happens is you're struggling, you turn to them who you've blanked all season and now say, come on, I trust you, come and win the game for me. You've got 20 minutes, by the way. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. So, you know, I just think he's struggling because of the lack of options.
Interesting, Adrian, to say the magic word there, Philippe Coutinho. We've not really heard that a lot from Liverpool in the last, year or so since he left. And then last weekend, it was a hot topic of conversation. Do they need someone like that moving forward? It's Burnley this weekend to move forward. Sunday, 12 o'clock, it gets underway UK time. For Burnley, a wonderful run of form before Newcastle last week. Two straight defeats. It's been interesting to watch them. They've gone old school. They have been bombing it up to the strikers. And last week against Crystal Palace, they tried to do it against James Tomkins and Scott Dan. It ain't going to work. Against Virgil van Dijk, it ain't going to work. But they're going to try it, aren't they, against Liverpool?
Well, I mean, Burnley, in the recent upturn, have gone back to what they did best. And it's worked. They've struggled all season because of the Europa League and having to change the way they've played. I think they went for a spell of trying to change the way they played. It hasn't worked. They've gone back to what they do well. And there's some times where they've shown a soft centre, which was weird. I think they're going to give Liverpool a hell of a game.
Do you?
I really do. I think it's going to be difficult. I really don't think it's going to be easy for Liverpool because the front three are not firing. They're not. Let's just be truthfully honest. They're not firing. And like you say, the midfield, because it's so workmanlike, their midfield against Burnley is going to be much of a muchness because there's no real genuine quality in either of them, but they will compete. So, you know, it's going to be about chances. It's going to be about, and Burnley will just lump the ball up the pitch and play knockdown football, which is going to be might be difficult for Liverpool if it's windy. Everyone laughs about it, but I'm telling you now, Aid, when you played against a team who launched it in the wind, it was horrible. It really was.
Yeah, but if you've got Virgil van Dijk, you'd probably be okay, wouldn't you? You'd be fine.
Yeah, I think defensively they're magnificent. I think the problem that they're going to have, Liverpool, is scoring. Yeah. I really do.
I'd be a bit more concerned if Liverpool, if this was at Turf Moor.
Yeah.
And I think of the front three, Sadio Mane is the one that's still in the best form. He's scored 6 in his last 5 home Premier League games, so you'd be looking to him to replicate that. But also with Burnley, it's made for Crouchy, isn't it, off the bench to come on at the end and spoil the party.
Oh, that would be a story. Yeah.
They're going to try and keep the game tight. And if they can do that, If they can go in at 0-0 at half-time, the thing is different.
Yeah, they scored twice at Old Trafford, didn't they? They got into Manchester United's faces and upset them. They've had a lot of no-shows away from home. Mm. I think 8 games on the road without scoring. So, yeah, I would fancy Liverpool, but I don't think it'll be a thrashing.
No.
Listen, let's move on. Manchester City up against Watford, Saturday, 5:30 UK time. Man City, it usually is. Man City have won 9 of their last 10 Premier League games. The longest current winning run in the competition of 5, 42 of 45 available points won at the Etihad this season, just the loss against Crystal Palace. But Watford find themselves in good form again. There have been some peaks and troughs of their season. They're in a peak right now, won 3 of their last 4 Premier League games, as many as their previous 15 combined.
And that fourth one that they didn't win was obviously Liverpool. They got beat 5-0 at Anfield. And
standard practice, really, though,
well,
to be fair.
It is against Liverpool. Manchester City have hammered Watford a few times the last few seasons, but there's also been a few close games as well. And I wonder whether, if you're a Watford supporter and you're looking for any hope, whether that Liverpool thrashing coming so recently might play a part, that the players might want to go out and say, look, we got done big time against a big team the other few weeks ago. Now, let's really try and, you know, keep it tight.
Do you think they'll set up differently?
Like Bournemouth did last week. You know, let's not get embarrassed here. So it could be a more difficult game for Manchester City than it might have been if we hadn't had that recent defeat.
How do they make it more difficult than they did for Liverpool? What would they change?
Well, the thing is, I think on that night, I don't think Watford were that bad. Liverpool were exceptional. The balls from Alexander-Arnold were unbelievable. Salah was superb. He was twisting and turning Adam Messina all evening. Van Dijk was coming up and heading them in. Mane was on form. So I think if Man City's players have a great day, they can do it to anyone.
Mm. I think they've got to have a bit more of the ball. I think that might be the key. Obviously, we know about Doucouré and Kapu. They're the bedrock of the side, aren't they? When they turn over the ball, and they're brilliant at turning over the ball and screening the back four, particularly Kapu, then I think they've got to try their best to just stay calm and keep the ball and just to ease the pressure. What a lot of Man City's opponents do is they sort of give up the ghost a little bit, like Bournemouth did. And I think you're just asking for trouble when that happens.
You say that,
I think we'll have a shot at least, Dave.
Well, look at those two games. So Bournemouth had, 17% of the ball and no shots, but it did take
no shots.
A kind of...
Have you two ever played a game of football in your lives where your team didn't have a single shot?
No. Only in the wind. Am I right?
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, I was talking about this last weekend. I just, if you're a Bournemouth fan that's paid 30, 40 quid for a ticket, you're fuming, aren't you? I don't care if it's 1-0 or 4-0 or 7-0. They lost.
Well, they nearly got something, though, didn't they?
Yeah, but I didn't care. I paid 35, 40 quid for a ticket and I didn't see my team try and score a goal. Rubbish.
I think the problem that you have also, you look at Bournemouth, they did really well, but it was always going to end in disaster because the type of players instinctively that Bournemouth are is their offensive attacking players. Now, if you're going to ask someone like that to defend, there's going to come a point where they lose concentration. There's going to come a point where they're going to fly forward because that is their instinct. Watford surprised me because... I actually thought they'd go to Liverpool, and I know the current form, the previous form, but the way Watford were playing recently, they're a better side than people give them credit for. I actually think if they'd believed in themselves, they could have really pushed for seventh. I think there was a, because I think they're that good.
Well, they could still do it, couldn't they? But they usually have that last 10 games tail off.
It surprised me that they went up there and got beat 5 because nothing in their previous form informed me that they were going to take a battery.
Yeah, I think they're capable of scoring goals at the Etihad if they play well enough. I like their narrow four in midfield. And if what they've got to do, they've got to be a bit brave, but drop off. As soon as it comes into the middle, boom, get on them, win the ball. And from there, then it's all about spinning De La Feo into those side channels, a bit like he did at Cardiff, wasn't it, recently. That's how I think they can hurt City. Whether they'll have enough quality or not, we'll have to wait and see.
I think it's really interesting, this game, because we've seen West Ham and Bournemouth go ultra-defensive, and they very nearly got something. West Ham couldn't take their chance, and Bournemouth didn't create one. If Watford went the same way, but I think they've got the players to take that chance, it could be interesting to see what City do, as they have struggled against that ultra-mega-defensive style.
City are fine, because over the time that Pep's been there, they'll have come across this so many times. So they will be patient. In fact, they'll know that's coming. So that's not going to be a problem for them. I think it's going to be about Watford. Pereira, De La Feo, Doucouré, Kapui and Deeney up front are hugely important. If they can get the ball into Deeney's feet, if they can set it back and get De La Feo in, if Pereira can link well between the midfield and Deeney up front, that will give them chances, because Man City do give you time and space to play if you're courageous. If you have the courage to go and put your foot on the ball, they will give you time to play.
A quick line for Riyad Mahrez, who is likely to play in this game with Kevin De Bruyne injured once again. Scored last week. He hasn't necessarily had a wonderful season at Manchester City. What do you make of his role in the coming weeks?
Yeah, it's going to be important. May I just say, the game that he came on and won in, the Leroy Sané stayed on the bench and didn't come on. That's the embarrassment of riches that they have. So if we put it in those terms, and he cost 60 million, Mahrez. It's going to be about him taking his chances when they come along. And he took it, and he's going to go into this game now. What they've done with this group of players is they've made that first 11 shirt so important that no one's going to be injured. I'm telling you, they're all going to be fit and raring to go because they know there are big games coming and they want to play in them all. So he will take his chance. He'd be champing at the bit to take his chance.
I think as well, if you look at someone like Mahrez, you can compare him to a lot of other players who have worked under Pep. And often their first season, it takes them a little while to sort of get used to the way Pep wants you to play, because what he wants you to do is so specific, so different to probably what he experienced before. Sané's, his second season was so much better than his first. You know, I'd see Mahrez, it wouldn't surprise me if next season he really is worth that 60 million.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's a complex coach, isn't he? Pep Guardiola. I think it'd take all of us quite a while to just digest the new information. He's a bit different. I think that's a really valid point. And when he has played, I think he's done okay, actually. He's contributed goals and assists. So I don't think Riyad Mahrez has been a flop by any stretch of the imagination.
I think he's been brilliant. Yeah. I think the thing about
brilliant's a bit of a stretch.
I think he's been fine. The thing about Guardiola is, if you saw that documentary, it's the intensity at which he works, the amount of information. You know, age yourself. Mm. When a manager is giving you so much information so intensively,
I didn't want any.
It's really difficult. It's difficult though, isn't it? I mean, I saw him on the TV at halftime. He went in with the players and he was talking so quickly. Yeah. I'm thinking, wow. I don't think I'd have been able to understand half of that, but yet he'll turn to me and go, "You got it?" I'm definitely going, "Yep, got it, Gaffer, got it." So it's the intensity that gets players sometimes.
We've got to move on, but I really hope Andre Gray scores again this week. Great redemption for him last week, and it's always great to see those tattoos. Incredible, aren't they? Amazing. Amazing array of tattoos that he's got, and a great goal last week. Some redemption for someone maybe a bit like Riyad Mahrez, who hasn't been so popular with the home support this season. That's going to be a great game, that. Don't miss it. Right, let's move on. Next up, let's talk Southampton against Tottenham.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Right, let's move on. Southampton against Tottenham Hotspur, Saturday at 3 o'clock UK time. This one gets underway. The Saints have won 3 of their 7 Premier League home games under Ralph Hasenhüttl, as many as they had in their previous 24 combined under Maurizio Pellegrino and Mark Hughes. For Tottenham, they have lost their last 2 away league games, the same number they'd lost in their last 13 on the road. But of course, picked up a brilliant win last night as we record against Borussia Dortmund. 1-0 on the night, 4-0 on aggregate. Quick line on Pochettino. He has been given a 2-game touchline ban for his Mike Dean square up at full time against Burnley. Adrian, let's talk about the game against Borussia Dortmund. I watched the second half of the game, was playing football the first stuff. That's why my hammies are so sore today.
Is it windy?
Oh, it was a little bit, yeah, but I can handle it like most professionals can. But I've got to ask you about the full performance against Borussia Dortmund because first half, defensively solid, Lloris makes save. Second half, chance Harry Kane. We are through them. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really professional performance, wasn't it? They did gift, not gift, Borussia Dortmund had a lot of chances. So that's a mild concern. But no, it was good. I mean, they went about the game with the right mentality, defended well as a team. They did what you'd expect a good team to do when they were 3-0 up from the first leg. So now, well played, Spurs, deservedly into the quarterfinals. But this game here won't be that much easier, even though Southampton and no Borussia Dortmund. I think the Hasenhüttl has got them going. And on the subject of touchline bans, is there anything more pointless than a touchline ban? Seriously, I would say this about any manager.
Huddersfield Town?
No, I said this when Wenger got one. It's got to be stadium ban, hasn't it? Because a touchline ban doesn't do anything. They get a great view. They get to communicate with a dressing room. So I don't think there's any punishment at all there.
No.
None.
No, I think that's a fair point. I mean, he did basically walk on the pitch and square up to a referee. And yeah, it's a ref we'd all like to have done that to during the years, but we haven't done it because you shouldn't do it. He apologised afterwards, but he should probably have got a longer punishment for this. And I think he's absolutely right.
It's funny. This reminds me of, I know of a stadium, of a touchline ban. Good friend of mine, myself and Leroy Rosinha, we coached Sierra Leone. He got sent off and an armed guard, four guards with guns, took him up and he wasn't allowed to move.
That's a punishment. Yeah, we'll let him stay out there as long as
couldn't move him. Couldn't do anything. The armed guards wouldn't even let him go toilet.
Did you go and speak to him during the game at all?
Nope.
Pass any notes?
Couldn't. Not at all.
Thought with a ban like this, you weren't actually allowed to speak to the dugout, but always do.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, listen, this is West Africa, mate. No, there's a lot more going on there, mate. No.
All right, a bit more on Tottenham Hotspur. What do you make of them last week in the North London Derby as well? They had lots of the ball, Adrian. You were covering the game. But didn't beat Arsenal.
No, I didn't think they played well at all. No. Son was off it and Kane didn't have a shot in open play, did he, apart from the penalty which he took? No, they were a bit lucky. I thought the only positive tactically was Sissoko. I thought he was really good, powerful. And the way that he got Trippier in over and over and over again on the right-hand side, that was impressive. But that aside, I don't think much was too good from Spurs' point of view. And they have to play much better, I think, to win at Southampton, who looked much better under Hasenhüttl.
It might prove to be an important point for them, though, in the end. They didn't play that well. They got back into the match. They survived by the skin of their teeth with that late penalty save and then the clearance from Vertonghen. Shouldn't have been able to do it, but obviously that's another story. But this will be a difficult game. Southampton pushed Manchester United all the way last weekend, weren't they? And now they're at home. Mm. They're fighting for their lives. They're right. It's them and Cardiff really going for that last relegation spot. So this is a tough game for Spurs.
Southampton were cheated last week. I actually think Chris Smalling's grabbed Bertrand's shirt, pulled him down. I think it's 0-0 or 1-0 then. Complete different kettle of fish. They played really well. Spurs looked a little bit leggy for me, where they're completely fit, but that little bit of sparkle wasn't quite there.
Their touch was off sometimes. The passes weren't going right.
I looked at the stats on this, actually, because I have to do the analysis for Arsenal, and they ran. I know this doesn't mean everything, but they did run, I think, over 3 kilometres less than Arsenal. Now, Pochettino's team is famed for
I think that's a,
for
that
the
makes
high
a huge
work
difference.
Rate. Yeah, exactly. They normally outrun the opposition, so I do think they're flagging.
I think that's a huge difference because, you see, that running puts you in people's faces, puts you at the pitch of the ball. I actually also believe that he's important, Harry Kane, and he scored 3 goals in 4 games. But before he came back, they'd found a way of playing that was suiting them superbly well. And I actually think he should have come on as sub because in those games where they've struggled, I just think he's upset the rhythm of how they've played. Yeah, you're going to bring him back. I just think he upset the rhythm of how they were playing before.
On Southampton, you mentioned they were unlucky to lose against Manchester United last time out. Been really impressed with James Ward-Prowse.
Good player.
The last couple of weeks. He was in an England squad, but then he kind of faded away under Mark Hughes. There was talk of him maybe leaving in the summer just gone. 5 Premier League goals now this season in midfield. Looks like a crucial element of what Ralph Hasenhüttl was trying to do.
Well, he needed players to step up because his strikers haven't been scoring, have they? I mean, that's been an issue for Southampton for a long, long time. So now we know he's a great set piece taker. We know he's got a wand from corners and free kicks. But in general, play, I think he's looked better and his confidence has grown. That has been the one problem. If if an Austin isn't scoring, who's going to get the goals? Or an Ings when he's fit? Redmond starting to chip in a bit more. I think that was a really good tactical change from Hasenhüttl, putting Redmond up top. And I think he's been liberated by the confidence that the manager's shown in him. The back three as well, I think, have settled quite nicely for Southampton. Up until Hasenhüttl's arrival, they had a different defence every week, Southampton. I think they've steadied the ship there. Look, they'll still be underdogs for this game, but if Spurs are leggy and a bit flat, they could come a cropper here.
Hopefully for Southampton, Danny Ings will be fit for this weekend. He is in contention for this one. We know that Charlie Austin isn't exactly Ralph Hasenhüttl's type of player because he just carries a little bit too much weight, doesn't quite
He's not as mobile as he used to be, Charlie Austin. Let's just say it as it is. It's the facts. And I'm virtually sure the stats will prove that to be the case. But where they are, Southampton, is... And it's that old one, it's the truth. They do look fitter, they do look stronger, they're lasting longer, they're in people's face, they're far more competitive. And they're because of that, when they win the ball back, they're further towards the opponent's goal, which means those runs in behind are less in terms of yardage.
I think they'll make it, Southampton. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to them moving forward. We had Franny Benali in last weekend, and he was basically saying it's another year, I think it's 3 years running now, where, as you often say, Paul, about teams, they're going to stay up because there are three worst teams, not because they've been good enough. Few months coming up for Southampton. Big summer coming up, should they make it, which we imagine they will. Right, let's move on. Leicester against Fulham, a Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. This one gets underway. Leicester have won just one of their last eight Premier League games, one draw and six defeats in that time. Only Fulham have picked up fewer points in their last eight than Leicester, so probably a good time for these two teams to face each other. David Walker, Brendan Rodgers last week, first game in charge. They were pipped late by a Watford at Vicarage Road. They went three at the back. Did they play well? Did they deserve something from it?
I think they played better as the game went on, and actually they were unlucky to lose the game, because I was sitting there watching it in the pub, and I was the only one there. and I was watching it from behind my fingers, because I thought Leicester were going to win. Morgan had a great chance late on. Madison was whipping balls in. They were really in the ascendancy, and they just got caught out. They went to sleep a little bit, and they got caught out by a quick move from Deeney and Gray. But I think he will take positives, I think, from the first game, from the performance. You know, they got Vardy through the middle. He picked up a bit of a knock, so I don't know what his fitness is like, but that was a good goal from him. I think the squad that he's got there will suit him and the style of football he wants to play. A lot of good young players, a lot of talented young footballers who want to play good football, and playing Fulham, so you'd expect them to win at home.
Yeah, it's perfect first home game, really, isn't it, for Brendan Rodgers to take on Fulham?
You would expect that, yeah. But if you look at the way Fulham played against Chelsea recently, I felt for them in terms of the goals they let in, but they were in the game for a lot longer than they normally are. And when they conceded, their heads didn't drop, which is what normally happens. But for Leicester, I think he is the right man, because there's a couple of things going on. What was difficult for Puel was to phase out some of the older group who had very strong relationships with the board. That's never a healthy thing for players to have. So phasing them out has been difficult, but he's got a lot of good young players. Chilwell's, Maguire is a decent young player, Damari Gray, Madison, Barnes, he's got some good young players, and he has a fantastic reputation, Brendan Rodgers, of developing young talent. So I expect them to be a force in the next few years in the Premier League.
Scott Parker said it was an audition for the full-time job, this little run of games that he's got. Last weekend, Adrian against Chelsea. He had McDonald, he had Kearney, who were crucial elements of their promotion side. He had Chambers in midfield, who scored and played very well. So the defence is always going to be an issue for Fulham for the rest of this season. But as Paul says, they were very competitive. They played quite well and probably could have got something.
Yeah, they probably could. They created chances against Chelsea, but you still look at it and Chelsea still, I think, 20 shots. So they're still open, aren't they? And I think if Leicester can fashion 20 shots, they'll win the game quite comfortably. But Parker will make them aggressive and a more hostile opposition, I think, than they have been. But he's not a miracle worker. And unfortunately, the members of the back four are just not Premier League quality, in my opinion. I mean, the guys at the moment, you've got Ream and Norvet, and Odoi, who's just had a horrendous season. I don't know how he's still getting picked, really. And then you've got Le Marchand, who's been awful. Joe Bryan's the left back at the minute. He's more of a left winger. I just think that if Leicester and their talents that you talked about there, the Harvey Barnes, the Madisons, the Vardys, if they get on the ball in the right areas, they will They will score goals against Fulham. I think Fulham, Leicester rather, haven't walloped anyone at home this year. I think the most they've scored on home turf's three against Huddersfield. This might be the day where they get four.
Yeah, tough season, tough weekend potentially upcoming for Fulham, who are second bottom, 17 points, 10 adrift of Southampton in 17.
City and Liverpool to come their next two games.
Yes, right at home. It's nonsense.
Yeah. Not a great audition, really, is it?
Well, I think he's actually,
easier than that.
He's preparing for life in the Championship.
Yeah.
Because I think for Scott, the reason why he has to stay is because looking at next season, the only way they're going to keep the Cairneys and the Sessegnons and the Mitrovicis and all of them is if Scott Parker stays.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, they're gone.
Right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk Crystal Palace up against Brighton. Right, the weirdest derby in football now, Crystal Palace against Brighton, because they were kind of upset of each other in the 70s or something. I'm not explaining it again, all right? Go on Google if you want to know why they're rivals.
It's Alan Muller, isn't it?
I think it's because no other team in the vicinity of the clubs care at all about these clubs.
There's
That's
a genuine hatred, though.
It's weird, isn't it? It's you've got to look into it. Eagles, seagulls, it's a whole thing. We haven't got the time. Right, Crystal Palace have won just one of their last six home Premier League games. They've got the lowest percentage of home points of any team in the Premier League compared to away. Brighton looking to secure consecutive Premier League victories. What a win last weekend against Huddersfield. Great celebration of Andone's goal as well. Paul, as a former Palace man, I've got to ask you this. Sean Dyche mentioned it last week. I covered the Leicester game the week before and we spoke about it after the game. How on earth have they been down there, Crystal Palace, all season long? What on earth has gone wrong at Palace for them to have even been in relegation contention when you look at the quality they have got front to back?
First of all, the players have underperformed, number one. There's no dispute in that. Secondly, they've paid the price for, I think, the way they finished the season last year was fairly strong, but it distorted really where they were, because what he didn't do was he didn't go and buy a centre-forward. Benteke was struggling. You know, you could see. I did a lot of their games last year. Benteke was not the man. They needed a centre forward because they were too reliant on Wilfred Zaha. And what was always going to come was Zaha was going to have a bad spell or get suspended or get booked or whatever or injured, and they were going to struggle, which is what happened. And Batshuayi is a great signing because Benteke's kicked on now, because that's what it does. It gives it competition. Connor Wickham's come back. All the forwards all of a sudden have come back. So now they've got competition up front. There's no pressure on Zaha. You see he's scoring and playing well now. Andros Townsend stepped up and he was really good. You know, you've got people like Wan-Bissaka who has been brilliant. Tomkins and Sacco were put together a decent partnership. So initially they underperformed. These players weren't playing to their potential. If that all makes sense.
It does make sense. You're absolutely right. It's just bizarre. Every time I've seen Palace, they've been incredible in games, and yet they have been one of those teams we've talked about all year as a struggler.
I think you hit the nail on the head with Batshuayi. I think sometimes it can just take one player to sort of unlock everything, right? Zaha is liberated. He's not, all of a sudden, he's not the only one that can do things and score goals and set up goals in the team. Yeah. And that look, he's got six goal involvements in his last six games, five goals, one assist.
Yeah, fantastic against Leicester as well. Yeah. Absolutely
no, there's a
game.
Lot to be said about competition for places. I also think that the midfield has changed a bit. I think they've gone with two sort of more positive midfielders either side of Milivojevic, who's a really good holding midfielder, isn't he? But Coyote will give you the legs, the engine, the power. Mm. And Meyer has probably been criminally underused a little bit. I think he's got that bit of guile that can unlock the door. So maybe it's just taken Hodgson a while to find the right 11. But you're bang on about Batshuayi in the competition for places made all the difference.
Something amazing happened last week with Brighton as they beat Huddersfield. Something that's not happened all season long. Two of the players they brought in last summer actually played really well. Johan Bakhsh was very, very good, and Andone scored the goal. Mm. It's about time the summer of 2018 signings did something.
Well, they cost enough, didn't they? I think the last time I was on this show, I battered Chris Hughton for his spending, because he spent so much money on so many players that he never wanted to pick. Mm. Finally, he's got around to picking them, and Andone looked good, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably the right time to bring him in, because Murray is a bit off it at the moment. He's flagging a touch, isn't he?
It's about the hour we took him off, I think, maybe a little bit earlier.
He just looks a bit sluggish, doesn't he? But I'm a bit worried for Brighton. I think that they're I know that they won that game, but they're not playing especially well. They were well beaten by Burnley not that long ago on home turf, and I fear for them. I think they're playing Palace at the wrong time here, yeah. And I don't fancy them at all. And I actually don't fancy them to win that many of their remaining games. They might be lucky, really, that Cardiff will be that bit worse. Yeah. And with Bamber out, I can't see Cardiff surviving. But Brighton would be close.
They've got a big game coming up against Southampton at the end of the month. They've got the FA Cup next weekend against Millwall, which is an added pressure on them at the moment, especially if they get through the semi-final. Do you want to be playing a semi-final when you've got a relegation battle?
You do, don't you?
Ask Wigan.
You don't want to be like that.
Are you ask a Wigan fan? They'll turn the cap every single time.
Listen, every fan would.
They would. But
strangely enough, with Brighton, I watched them play Fulham, where they're 2-0 up at half-time. Fulham scored 4 goals in a half. Dunk and Duffy could not handle Mitrovic. And since then, because the thing that they've built it on is being difficult to beat. Since then, they've just shipped so many goals. Yeah. Even at home, where it was difficult, they've shipped so many goals and so many what I call relegation-type goals, where one attacker around the sea of defenders and he seems to get the ball in the net. And, you know, the players Chris has bought haven't really produced.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's why Glenn Murray's struggling, because he's playing too many games.
41 conceded, minus 11 goal difference. Let's move on. Chelsea against Wolves is Sunday, 2:05 UK time. God, I hate all these weird kickoff times on Sunday now. They should be the same. If you're going to do 3, do 12, 2:15, 4:30. It's always moving around. I don't like it. It annoys me. It ruins my weekend. Anyway, I keep missing the first 10 minutes of games, all right? I'm busy. Anyway, I kind of set the games to when I'm doing the lamb. Do you know what I mean? Keep messing it up. Anyway, Chelsea against Wolves. Let's talk Kepa Arrizabalaga. Did he serve enough punishment? And was Sarri rewarded for that display last week, Paul?
Did he serve enough punishment? The whole thing, I'm sitting there with my wife and my wife is saying to me, what is going on? Have you ever seen something like this before in your life? Now, whatever you think, I've noticed goalkeepers from the Goalkeepers Union are saying, you know, Sarri was wrong. Simply put, when your number comes up, come off the pitch. Mm. That's it in a nutshell. Did he serve enough of a punishment? No.
It was great against Fulham, though, wasn't
it? He was
made
some great saves.
Fulham.
But no. No, he didn't. I probably would have kept him out, but because he's one of your best players, that's where the conflict is.
Yeah, it was a bit disrespectful, you know, to Caballero. Obviously, Kepa was in the first place. He wasn't just disrespecting the badge and the manager. It was also his fellow goalkeeper union member, Caballero, who stood there like a lemon on the sidelines. Credit to him, by the way, for not kicking off. Some players might have done in that situation.
Would you?
Maybe. Caballero played well in a victory against Spurs. So if I'm Caballero, I'm now thinking, what's the point? Yeah. What's the point in being here?
I think that's worse. I think that what he experienced at Wembley, I think him coming in and playing well and then getting dropped is worse.
Yeah.
It really is. As far as I'm concerned, if I come in and I play well, I fully do expect to play the next game until I'm not good
enough.
He's
in possession of the shirt. I absolutely think Sarri was too soft there. And, Kepa has got away with it big style.
We've given Jorginho a lot of stick on this show this year. I think that's fair to say, Dave. He's taken his fair amount of criticism of us and all of our guests.
Mainly you, but yeah.
Mainly me, but not many have disagreed with the many brilliant points that I've made. However, last week, I actually thought he was very good against Fulham, and he also scored a really lovely goal, second of the season.
Yeah, he did.
Bit of praise for him.
He's a good player. I mean, they didn't sign him because he was rubbish for Napoli. He's got quality. The issue is, if you man-mark him like a lot of clubs have this season, he does nothing.
But it's a settling in season. We've spoken about that with Riyad Mahrez, maybe. Do you think that's more what we're seeing?
I think he's been thrown to the wolves a bit by Sarri as well in terms of the shape of the team. If he'd allow Kante to play a little bit closer to him, I think he'd be on the ball more and more influential. But the way they're set up is he's a bit easy to negate, in my opinion. And Wolves have got the players, I think, to really harass and hound Chelsea's midfield. They've been superb in that engine room, haven't they? And it was interesting last time out. He basically, Nuno, rested his first choice midfield, didn't he? Neves didn't play. Moutinho didn't play. Then Donker, I think, is in his first choice. He played. I think those three, they can really get in amongst the Chelsea players here and make it a tough game for Chelsea. They've done it to Arsenal. They've done it to Man United. They did it to Spurs. And I think they can do it to Chelsea.
More points against the big six than any other of the other four teams. 9 points they've picked up against those teams.
They're a good
side.
I've seen them so many times. They're a very, very good side, and they will deal with Chelsea. May I just say about Jorginho, it's the disease we have in this country is we hang our hat on what he can't do, and we don't really celebrate what he actually can do. He's a good player.
Well, he's finally done something.
No,
though,
Man City wanted him. The problem is... I think Sarri isn't expecting flashing lights from him. He's expecting him to... He's a continuity player. Yeah. Keep the ball. Now, what he did against Fulham was play a little bit further forward. That was the difference. He played a little bit further forward, which is why he finds himself on the edge of the box, pass the ball in the net. Wolves, I think, will deal with him. They won't have to mark him, but if you put players around him... I remember Paris Saint-Germain did it against Pogba. Just put players around him... Yeah. That stifled him from getting the ball.
Well, they have two up top, don't they? In Jimenez and Jota.
Yeah.
And these two, they'll just be pests. One of them will drop in. Yeah. And Raúl Jiménez, by the way, what a good signing he's turned out to be. I mean, I didn't really know him before he came.
His record wasn't that impressive. Yeah. If you looked at his goals record, other clubs he'd been at, different leagues across the world, it wasn't someone you'd be looking at thinking, oh, God.
Yeah, but it's not amazing now. It's his all-round game.
He's performed better than I think anyone expected him to, though, in terms of his assists and his goals. He's been a real threat.
Yeah, but he's worked it well, Nuno, because what he's done is, at the back end of the Championship, he brought all these players in the Championship. And so the nucleus of the side came up to the Premier League, and he believed in the way they played and added a little bit more quality.
Yeah.
And they just look a very, very good side.
If Wolves win this game, they go 10 points behind Chelsea. They would remain in 7th, 10 points behind the Blues in 6th. But what an achievement it would be to finish 10 points, not finish, but of course be 10 points behind Chelsea with the finish in sight. And they are going to add, they're going to improve. And Nuno has shown us many times this year, he's a very versatile coach. The Dendonka thing, he wasn't playing there a few weeks ago. Yeah. Diego Jota.
Next Spurs manager, I reckon. Nuno. Ooh, yeah, if Poch goes.
Poch might get the Wolves job if he's lucky. You're absolutely right. we've got to move on. Cardiff against West Ham United, Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. Adrian, you mentioned it earlier on. Cardiff City losing Sol Bamba out for this season. It's an ACL he's picked up, so he's going to miss the rest of this campaign. They've lost their last three Premier League games. 1-10 is the aggregate score. 5-1 against Watford, 3-0 against Everton, the big losses. They had that little boost in form, boost in results, performance against Bournemouth and Southampton. It's really slipped away since then.
It has, yeah. They've been very open, conceded some bad goals, even with Bamba on the pitch. But he's hugely influential. He shouldn't always be just about one player, but he's a massive unit. He's quick. He's the glue that's held them together for not just this year, but ever since he signed, really. So we don't know, and Warnock doesn't know, because he's pretty much played every week since Warnock signed him. So how will Cardiff fare without the big man? None of us really know. I feel that they're doomed, unfortunately. Yeah. This isn't going to be another hard game. West Ham are... they're improving, aren't they? They've got much more quality now with Lanzini back in the side. You know, you look at the bench lately for West Ham.
Nazri and Arnautovic.
It is top class.
Getting
top class bench.
That's
the
thing. They're getting everyone fit. And now you look at their bodies and you think, wow, they've got some good players. The thing about Bamba is a huge loss. He's also their top goal scorer. So it's not just about defending. Everything he brings, they'll have a puncher's chance, you know, like most teams do. It's a one-off game. But I can't see past... West Ham beating them and beating them.
You can catch West Ham though, can't you? These are the kind of teams, West Ham, Leicester, Bournemouth, you could maybe catch them on a weird day.
I think you're also well equipped, I think, West Ham now. You've got Rice as a midfielder that's really a centre-half. So from those long throws, from those free kicks and corners, you've got Diop, who's massive, Balbuena, whoever's playing alongside him, Ogbonna. They've got some big units there.
One final question on West Ham. I think it's quite interesting that since the whole Marko Arnautovic thing that went on during the January transfer window, he's been fit for a few weeks, but it's Hernandez that's starting up front. What do you make to that?
Well, a part of it you can say is Pellegrini's a good bit of management. Just to not necessarily put him in his place, but show him that you are part of a squad. You're not the focal point. For now, you are part of a squad. So as much as you've kicked off a stink, we can do without you. And I actually think he could be sold in the summer. That's just my personal opinion. And I think that's what he's doing. more than anything else.
It's interesting, Pellegrini's been talking this week about players we can replace. Like, it's a bit like, well, we've got a director of football. If someone good wants to go, we've got someone working on replacements, which kind of hasn't been the way before. Anyway, Huddersfield-Bournemouth, let's move on to that. Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. Huddersfield looking to win consecutive Premier League games.
If Bournemouth don't manage a shot against Huddersfield, then I think they should be relegated immediately, disqualified from the league.
He's not wrong, is he?
Bournemouth's
away form is so bad, lost nine in a row on the road, but you've got to be able to, I would say, not only have a shot, they should be beating teams like Huddersfield comfortably.
They should, but they're missing Callum Wilson too much, aren't they, really? You shouldn't miss one player as much as they have done of late. At the back, it's not been as good. He's made a few rickets, hasn't he? And the new boys come in, Meppham. Last weekend, it was a three with Simpson. But this is Huddersfield. Surely they can go there and go on the front foot and try and impose themselves. If they don't and they let Huddersfield sort of take the initiative, I think Huddersfield will win the game because Huddersfield, they can rough teams up. And Bournemouth are there. They're for the taking, really, on current form. Yeah.
I think it depends on which Bournemouth turn up. Is it the Bournemouth that beat Chelsea or the Bournemouth who, 4 or 5 days later, get beat by Cardiff?
Yeah.
That's the problem with Bournemouth. You really have no clue which one
turns up. Their confidence is gone, though. I think their confidence is shot. And that is why, in part, the manager, Howe, went so radical the other way. He knew his players were on their knees. He thought, the only way I can control this is to just play 10 at the back. Mm. And
which
with
is
that,
unlike him.
Yeah, which is very unlike him. So I think you have to take that as what it is, and that is that they are low at the moment. And if they if Huddersfield get in their faces, score early, it could be another difficult day for them.
I saw a great joke from Daniel Storey a few days ago, and he was saying, despite the fact Huddersfield have been awful and they keep losing games, they're always 12th, aren't they? Whatever happens, they're always 12th. There's no way of moving them from that position for whatever reason. But they could go 13th if Crystal Palace win their game and Bournemouth lose this weekend. One final game we not mentioned, Newcastle against Everton. That's Saturday at 3 o'clock UK time. Newcastle have won their last four Premier League home games. They weren't great against West Ham last week away from home. Everton won two of their last three on the road. Gylfi Sigurdsson finds himself in good form as well. Briefly on this one, got to ask you this, Adrian. Theo Walcott, has he ever played 90 minutes?
I can't remember. No, he's not shining, is he, really, in this Everton side? I think that we have seen the best days of Theo Walcott now, unfortunately, and there may be a phasing out over time. He's not delivering the goals or the match winning performances that maybe Everton expected of him. I thought it was a good performance from them against Liverpool, definitely a step in the right direction. And this will be interesting because Newcastle on home turf are delivering. Yep. I like Almiron, I like Rondon. So difficult one to call. I think this might be a draw. But as for Theo, he needs to buck his ideas up. Otherwise, he'll be looking at joining a club at the lower end of the Premier League, which will be the beginning of the end for him.
He likes playing Newcastle, though.
Does he go on?
Yeah, 5 goals and 5 assists against Newcastle. They are the team that he has scored or assisted the most against.
Can I play you every week?
Is that I think he scored a hat-trick against them, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So that might have skewed the stats.
I look at him and I think the biggest problem he's had is the inability to learn. He can't reinvent himself. And the problem that you're having with him is his pace is not a factor anymore.
Mm.
It's not. And with Everton, what gets me about Everton is, you know, teams are reflective of their manager. I don't know what Marcus Silva is. I genuinely don't know what to... And so Everton, I look at them and I don't know what kind of team they are. I don't know... You know, most teams have an identity. Mm. You kind of know how Man City play. You know how Man United now play.
Well,
got no clue how Everton play.
At the start of the season, they had a bit of an identity. They're supposed to be fast, high octane, press from the front, and it's all about pace and athleticism. That is a Marco Silva team. You saw it at Watford briefly.
Mm. Yeah.
But then what happens is that fizzles out, and then he seems to lose he loses focus at the back, and they start to concede goals, and then everything seems to fall apart.
Do you know what? Honestly, I don't know because I know what you're saying makes sense, but I don't know because he's normally gone halfway through the season.
Yeah.
So we really don't know what the second half of the season's like for him. So I look at him and I just think I'm not convinced with him because you consider how much money he was given to you know, buying people like Yerry Mina is a huge mistake off of a tournament where he scores a great header. But don't do much else, you know?
Listen, lads, we've got to move on to the end of the show. We're out of time, which means we don't need to ask you this week. There's no time to ask you about Rafa Benitez's future, which is nice, isn't it? A week without it, which is nice.
Keep him. Keep him.
Don't do it. Don't do it. We've got no time. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Adrian. David Walker, as ever. We are back with another preview show next week.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.